Coming up today, we go inside the brutal Game of Thrones YouTube community, try on some new pants, and review Apple and Google's augmented reality dreams. You're listening to episode 333 of the Wired UK podcast, your weekly guide to the best of science, technology, business and design. I'm your host, James Templeton, and joining me are Roland Manthorpe.
Hello.
And Sian Bradley.
Hello.
A debut.
Yes.
Podcast debut on...
How exciting.
In cricket, 333 is known as a triple Nelson.
And it's unlucky, right?
It's unlucky, yeah.
So, welcome, Sian. So great to have you on.
It'll be fine. As always, we'll start the show with a fact. Roland, why don't you go first?
People tend to live longer during recessions.
Depressing.
That's encouraging.
It actually is. Yeah, so I went to see the Bob Dylan play Girl from the North Country last night, which is totally incredible. Even if you're not Dylan, although I am so much that I even own his Christmas album. And there was yes, that's how much of a fanboy I am.
Mm-hmm.
But there's one of the kind of things that was talked about is that it's set in the Great Depression. And it talks about that kind of suicide rates really went up during that time. And so I was kind of idly Googling this today to see if it was true. And it is. Suicide rates did go up a little bit during the Great Depression. But in all other ways, people tend to live longer.
Is it because I drink less in a depression? I smoke less in a depression?
That is exactly why. Basically, when the economy is growing, we sleep less. We drink more, and we have kind of a more stressful lifestyle. Also, there's more traffic on the roads.
Yeah.
There's more kind of accidents at work. And so
all those baby boomers are absolutely doomed because they've been living it large since the 1980s.
Yeah, well, this is the interesting thing is that recessions feel terrible. They're socially really bad. Everyone is, almost kind of literally depressed. But in terms of, this is kind of rough measures because it's looking at mortality. But in terms of at least kind of physical health and living longer, economic decline is good for you.
Here comes a long, miserable existence.
Not silver lining.
It's okay, millennials. You'll be really, we'll be really unhappy.
Yeah,
but we'll live forever.
Yay, Sian! What did you learn this week?
So I just learned that this little music festival called the Shambhala Festival in Northamptonshire served only grey squirrel and insects this year. Meat-wise, that is. None. It wasn't just the only food.
Did they have something in for the squirrels?
Did they what?
Did they have something against the squirrels?
Yeah, because, you know, grey squirrels, bad, all of that. So they were meat-free last year. But then they thought, why not be meat-free when you can just cut down the squirrel population?
Technically an invasive species.
Yeah. It was about invasive species and they just put them on skewers and handed them out.
Grey squirrels are North American.
Yeah, this is
coming over here, killing our squirrels.
This is actually a kind of sort of strange immigration metaphor being played out here, isn't it?
Yeah. Tasty. I imagine if squirrels taste anything like guinea pig, which I imagine they probably do, tastes like chicken, and everything tastes like chicken.
Gamey, apparently.
Gamey.
Potently gamey.
Well, I'll have to kill the one in my back garden, or maybe not. So I was recently on holiday in Newfoundland in Canada, which was terribly nice. I'd recommend it if you like not many people and lots of nature. But interestingly, the island is made up of three distinct geological regions, and it makes it almost unique in the world. So the eastern part of Newfoundland that's nearest to Europe is made up of what went on to become the European continent that we live on today. The middle is an ancient seabed, and the western part is what went on to become the continent of North America. So it's this weird leftover bit of ancient tectonic shifts. And it was on Newfoundland in the early mid-1900s that scientists proved the theory of plate tectonics, because you can see how it happened.
Really?
Yeah. And there's a bit of Newfoundland. It's called the Tablelands. It's in Gros Morne National Park. And you can actually walk on the Earth's mantle, where it was pushed up as these two ancient supercontinents slid against each other. It pushed the mantle up. And the rock there is still so lacking in nutrients that nothing can grow. So it looks like Mars.
Hmm.
It's incredible.
And
wow.
So is it on a plate fault, a plate edge, a plate, what's it called again, a fault?
Geological fault.
Thank you.
Yeah, fault line. It used to be. So it was the ancient continents of, I can't remember what they were called, but one of them was called Gondwana, I think. So these ancient supercontinents that eventually all shimmied and danced around to become what we have today. Newfoundland was the site of an ancient rift in the Earth's crust.
So it's stable then?
It is now, yeah. It's some of the oldest rock in the world is on Newfoundland. So if you like geology, then Newfoundland is... It's like Disneyland.
Just a little bit younger than the Rolling Stones. Didn't. Sorry.
Yeah.
Sorry.
All right, Roland. Talk us through the first story this week. I will be completely upfront here. I have never seen a single minute of Game of Thrones.
Ooh.
Yeah, I know. I did have the pleasure of editing Roland's story about the Game of Thrones YouTube community, which, even for someone that knows nothing about Game of Thrones, was really, really bizarre.
So, yes, I... would say I have a moderate to extreme slash violent addiction to Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
And you know, the latest season has just finished, and
we'll give no spoilers.
No spoilers.
Yeah.
No spoilers at all. Although
about the whole season.
Yes, and also no ranty commentary about how things are going wrong.
Okay.
No, none of that. This will all be about a related topic.
Yeah.
So, Game of Thrones, the seasons, there's a week between episodes. They're not going to put it all up at once, so you can't binge it. But it's also the kind of show which gives you the most terrible cravings between episodes. You have to get more. And so in order to sate this terrible addiction, I started watching all these kind of these YouTube analysis videos about Game of Thrones.
Right.
And sort of things like who has Valyrian steel, kind of based on analysis of the books and show. Things like that. And then I realised that these videos were incredibly popular. Like they've got millions and millions of views. And also that there seem to be hundreds of people out there making Game of Thrones-related videos on any conceivable topic. Like almost anything you can imagine, there's a video out there for it.
So they've picked over the corpse of the show and taken every scrap of meat.
And also going through the books and coming up with theories. It's this incredibly rich, diverse, strange community. And... so I kind of had a little look around. No one seemed to have written anything about it. So I wanted to find out more, and I got in touch with a few YouTubers to find out what was really going on.
And the interesting thing, it's really fascinating. You think it's a bit like a footballer, a sports star. They only have a certain amount of time in where they make all their money and have all their success. And for them, it's until their mid-late 30s. For a Game of Thrones YouTuber, it's what? It's on for 6 weeks a year?
Yes, so
it's
about
mad.
Yes, exactly. Mm. And so basically if you're kind of like a seasonal worker. Mm. So you've got you've got these 2 months when you make all your money and get all your views, and then the rest of the time, well, you know, some people manage to support themselves. But just to kind of put some numbers on this. So I spoke to one person who's gone full time on Game of Thrones, and he said that he expects to make $50,000 to $60,000 a year, and he does it along with his partner. He's full time and she's part time on it.
Mm.
So that's kind of that's what's possible. But the thing that I really wanted to know, it was like, okay, so we're in springtime has just been,
yep.
And it's just kind of finished. And obviously after spring, you know, eventually comes winter.
I see what you're doing.
Yeah. Oh yes, yeah. Yes, exactly. So basically, anyway, and because the thing is that we've just finished the penultimate series. The last one is going to be late 2018, I think. So winter is coming full stop. So I wanted to know kind of what they were thinking. But actually, what I kind of found out was that winter might already be here, because the Game of Thrones YouTube community, like a lot of YouTube communities, is really struggling with the fact that YouTube has changed its monetization policy, and because basically people are getting less money off ads, and they're finding it harder and harder to make money, and what this produces is a much more kind of clickbaity, sort of nasty environment, and you know, for it's a show about backstabbing and treachery and general violence and evil doing, and it seems like the community is actually heading in that direction as well. At least that's what people told me.
This is brilliant. You know, you zoom in on this community that no one's really written about and no one's really given any thought to, and you find the sort of verisimilitude of life. You find conflict and rivalry and backstabbing and all sorts.
Yeah, and I just loved talking to all these people who are involved in it, and all their kind of different reasons for getting into it. You know, like some of them are just, they just love the material. They're so interested in it, and they kind of, and they've got, you know, so many theories and they want to share those. Other people are almost kind of pursuing a creative urge through this. And yeah, kind of seeing this whole little world and how it's developed over the last, however many, 8 years or something.
Yeah.
And to the point where it's got massive, and now it seems like it might all just end.
So as a fellow Game of Thrones fan, you watch it a lot, right? Are you as addicted as it to Roland? Are you filling your weeks with Game of Thrones YouTube videos?
No, see, I'm a lot lazier, and I'll just, as soon as I finish watching, I'll just go on Twitter and read what people have been tweeting about it.
Fair.
But I get the need to know what other people are thinking and see theories and things like that. But I think... I don't know if I'm ready to get that invested. But there was it's just going to ruin the magic of it. I haven't read the book.
And for the ruining the magic thing, that's a really good point, because there was a bunch of people that Roland, when you spoke to them, they said that doing it had almost ruined the magic of the show for them, because you get sucked into this thing where you have to keep making videos, and your followers are like, well, don't make a video about some random horror film that you've watched. We want you to look at Game of Thrones more, and they're hungry for more and more, but there isn't any more. The well is dry.
Yeah, but also it's this thing. Game of Thrones is so popular online that you've got a channel doing pop culture, and you're investigating all your different interests, and then because you're interested in it, you do one Game of Thrones video, and it gets about 10 times more views than anything else you do.
And this little voice in your head goes, money.
Yeah, or not even money, just success and popularity. Fame. And things are working. And so you do one more, and before you know it, you're in... Because this has happened to quite a few people, you can see it. Your entire channel has become all about Game of Thrones, but you're hurtling towards this cliff edge, and it's not sustainable. It's a little parable of the entire kind of media ecosystem.
It's a microcosm of the internet.
Yes, mm-hmm. Exactly.
Algorithms bias things towards things that are popular and drown out everything else.
Yes, and you start doing stuff that's popular, but it isn't. You can't kind of make a living that way, and it can. And also, is that what no one knows exactly what YouTube has done. So this thing that's called the adpocalypse. That's what they call it. YouTube say they haven't really made any changes, and they won't say exactly what they've done. And so it's all through just kind of observed data. And it's absolutely heartbreaking in a way. You speak to people who expect to make all their income for the year in this 2 months, and they'd planned to go full time, and they'd invested, and they bought new stuff, and then they find that they've got double the views but half the money. And I mean, it's sad. It's brilliant. I love these little worlds.
So is all the people you spoke to are gonna keep doing it for the next season, or is there some people that are getting out while the going's still sort of good?
No, I guess they're all gonna keep on doing it for the next season. It is a long way off, and then afterwards, who knows? They'll just
go on to the next thing.
Yeah, just see. Well, some people are gonna stick at it, get into the books. Maybe like other series. Some people are going to try and do other things.
Well, we saw this with Harry Potter, which in my mind is something that you can compare it to. You had the Pottermore universe that grew out of that, and then JK's kind of been persuaded after saying, I'm not going to write any more books, to write some more books, and to do stage plays. And you have this huge, huge body of material, and people are still so passionate about it. They don't want that world to die, and they'll do anything to keep it alive.
Are we going to have a spin-off?
Yes, HBO have definitely agreed to at least one spin-off. I mean, of course, this all kind of interacts. So any watchers of the show will know that it has been getting not as good, basically, and been getting a bit. I mean, it's lost some of the kind of the thing that made it amazing early on.
Well, isn't this because they've gotten so far ahead of, from my ignorant point of view, they've gotten so far ahead of the books that they're kind of running a bit off on their own now?
Yeah, but also. There's a kind of weird interaction between the writers on the show and what the fans want and what the fans are demanding, and the kind of the writers giving them kind of trying to satisfy them, but at the same time make a coherent show. And also, now we're all locked into it. We can't escape. A friend of mine actually wrote a piece in The Guardian this week saying that it was too big to fail, the show. And it's kind of like that now. It's got to succeed whether we're enjoying it or not.
Yeah, you watch it through rose-tinted glasses, definitely.
Yeah, and also because just to kind of sate that terrible hunger for more.
Especially seeing as you're going to live forever.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, there is that too.
Yeah.
All right, well, we'll leave it there. Roland, I suppose you'll disappear off down some other Game of Thrones rabbit warren. We'll be back here in a few months.
Or some other kind of weird obsession that I end up usefully spending my time on.
Yes, and you can read all about it on wired.co.uk. There's lots more to find out about the Game of Thrones YouTube universe, so check it out online. Our second story this week, it's two stories in a way. It's about Apple and Google, the two biggest technology companies in the world, though Facebook might want to say something about that, but it's probably Apple and Google, isn't it?
And Microsoft. Still. Don't forget Microsoft.
Oh, yeah, there they are, by the side. Chirpy. Augmented reality. We've probably all played Pokemon Go, right? I know Roland and I have. Sean?
It's quite embarrassing. I didn't have enough space on my phone, but I wanted
to. That's not really embarrassing. It's probably, you know, everyone got a bit obsessed with it for a while, yeah. And I think there are still millions of people who are there.
I saw some people playing in the park the other day, and it really... Yeah, surprise me! It's nostalgic.
Oh, I was in Edinburgh and I saw a dad and his two. I'd say they're like a 7-year-old and a 9-year-old, all walking along on their playing Pokemon.
Nice,
really, yeah, really. Jimmy, because actually, you, James, you carried on for ages.
I was on it until autumn, and then to go back to what we were just saying, winter came, and it wasn't so nice to wander around. I found it a nice way to explore the city. So, Pokemon Go, it used augmented reality, even though most people turned off the thing that meant you could see a Pidgey on the street in front of you. So many Pidgeys. That was augmented reality. You were still finding things in the world around you that were projected there by a piece of computer software. Snapchat, Instagram filters, that's also augmented reality. So when you turn yourself into a goat or a cat or a baby or whatever, augmented reality. It's augmenting things on top of reality. And the big technology companies believe that this is going to be, if it's not voice, if it's not bots, then the next big interface is going to be augmented reality. So they're putting an awful lot of money and development behind it. And this week we've seen a couple of big announcements. The big announcement was from Google. It confirmed its own augmented reality functionality for Android. It's called AR Core. It's a software development kit that allows anyone to bring AR features to existing Android phones without the need for hardware upgrades. So it will immediately be available in preview mode for Google's Pixel phone and the Samsung Galaxy S8, with lots of other devices that are running the latest operating system and have the right level of spec from the likes of LG, Asus, Huawei, and others coming later this year. So Google has finally shown its hand. It's been experimenting with this technology for a little while, and now we know an awful lot more about what its plans are for it, and they're big plans.
Yeah, and I think because this anyone who follows technology at all will find this incredibly familiar, because tech's in this kind of because there isn't that much going on in terms of great big new mobile type shifts at the moment. Yeah. Everyone's got terrible next thing itis, and then the next thing before this was VR. But VR felt like it was a sort of top-down announcement in a way, as in that it was decided by some people that it would be the next big thing and, you know, get on with it. Whereas this feels like it really is on the ground. People are doing loads and loads of crazy things. It's got a real kind of energy around it.
Well, there's an accessibility to it. We talked about this quite a bit on the podcast before. The idea of strapping a virtual reality headset onto you, it disconnects you from the world around you. And while some people might argue that Pokemon Go's done that to a lot of people, it does. It gets people out. It gets people exploring. You can still look up. You can have a drink. You can do whatever it is. You can enjoy yourself without having to shut yourself away. And that, for me, is why we're now seeing a lot more announcements around augmented reality. And yay, Microsoft is still there plugging away with HoloLens. But something as simple as a software development kit for a phone, everyone already owns these, you hold up your phone and in front of you, you see things that aren't actually there. And that can be either fun or useful. So Apple is expected to, it will, when it releases iOS 11 in a few weeks' time after it announces the iPhone 8 or whatever it's going to call it, then we'll have Apple's AR kit built in and we'll start to see these apps coming out. And one of them, I think this is a great example, IKEA. Everyone gets furniture from IKEA, right?
Oh, really?
Yes.
So hang on. So we'll go on. You explain it, because I think this is actually fairly useless, but...
But it's useful.
Do you think?
Yeah.
So, hang on, should we explain what it is? No. I think we should have a conversation about it where we never explain what it is.
Or just say useless. Yes. So everyone that looks through the IKEA catalogue and thinks, ooh, that Pwang chair would look really good in the corner of the room, or that...
Billy bookcase.
Yeah, whatever the name of the coffee table that everyone has is, Big Thor or something like that. You can hold up your phone and see it in your room. So the way that most augmented reality software development kits work is they identify light, they identify depth, and they identify angles. So that means that you can place an object on a surface.
Slam.
Slam?
That's the technical term for it.
Slam, really?
Slam it down.
Systematic local area mapping, something like that.
Really?
Yeah. Wow. I think I've just got that wrong.
It's pretty good, though.
But it's fun to say, slam.
Slam. Yeah, so they all have slam built in. So you can see what the thing that you want to buy will look like just by holding your phone up in your room and seeing it.
Yeah. Which actually, yeah. Well, so personally, I don't know what you think, Sian. I think this is an example of something that is fairly useless. But there are lots of great other examples that are really relevant. Sorry, James. I mean, you know.
I think it's a good one.
I mean, I think it's great when your imagination fails you. And, you know, you've always been in that situation when you're, like, trying to reimagine your room and you're trying to, like, be like, oh, would this fit here? And what would that be like over there? So I think, yeah, if it worked, I think it would be pretty cool.
So the one that I think is better is find your friend at a festival.
This is brilliant.
Yeah, because yep. This is actually... Because also I think is that when they work is that it doesn't matter if they're a bit clunky. So this is, you're trying to find someone at a festival, you match up your locations, and then it'll basically kind of, you can look through your phone and see the normal environment, but there'll be an arrow pointing at your friend. So instead of that thing where it's like, you're texting back and forth being like, I'm behind the drunk people.
Which
drunk people?
You know, near the toilets. Toilets?
Yeah. And on and on and on. Even when you're quite close, it'll just show you. And I just think, I mean...
Well, so this functionality is already in things like, I think, City Mapper and Google Maps. You can share location between people. But having that taken off a screen that you look down at and onto a screen where you have this big flashy arrow spinning in the air right above someone, that's useful. It's niche, but it's useful.
Yeah, see, at 5'2", I can really get behind that because there's no way I can see above a crowd. You know, if you've got a bit of height on you, you might be able to do a bit of looking over, but a massive arrow would really help me out from getting lost in a crowd. So, yeah. For the short people, it's a great idea.
Yeah, it's just a cool little idea. From what I understand, unlike VR, developing these things doesn't require like a gigantic team of highly skilled people. I'm sure that we'll see. There'll be some other Pokemon Go type thing, and we'll all download it onto our phones, and we'll start using these AR type things just a little bit more. And that way, we can all get ready for the dystopian future, which is where we're all wearing Google Glass. And checking our emails, even as we apparently look at each other during a conversation.
Yep. Well, Charlie Brooker made an episode of Black Mirror about it, so it's definitely going to happen.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. Future predicted.
There's a bunch more examples that we picked out. You can read through them and see them. It's probably best to see them. Head to wire.co.uk.
Can I ask you a question, though, before we move on to the next story?
Please.
Do you have any sense... because, you know, so if this is going to be the next big thing, then that means it's also going to be the next big... titanic clash of Apple versus Google. Have you got any sense of who's doing this better, or is that like a not really relevant question at this stage?
Well, again, it's going to come down to the fundamental differences between the two operating systems. So you have Android, where anything goes, and you have iOS, where only very specific rules must apply. And it's whether the battle will be won by volume or potentially on Apple's side, quality. And interestingly, it might come down to partnerships. So I think the IKEA Places app, I think that's what they called it, IKEA Place or something like that, that will only
not IKEA Torsten or
IKEA, it's on the notes, Roland. IKEA something.
Yeah, sorry.
IKEA Place?
IKEA Place.
IKEA okay. Place.
Can confirm.
It's initially only coming to iOS. I think it's more of a development cycle thing, and it will eventually come to Android. But you might end up in a position where one operating system has the real killer application, the real killer partnership. I don't know what that would be. It's very difficult to imagine because all the examples at the moment are quite small. They're little ideas like a tape measure, like something that puts a chair in your room or an arrow above a friend at a festival. What's that big idea going to be, and which platform is going to be able to support it better? And will hardware have to change to make that experience more compelling? And will it be Apple or will it be Google that makes that hardware breakthrough?
Okay. So, yeah, early days, basically.
Yeah, that's a terrible answer.
Because I guess the thing is that, in a sense, it's the continuation of the mobile battle.
Yeah.
But, after that, you assume there'll be a headset and everything else, and maybe that might change things. I'm just sort of thinking about, like, you know, the next big thing, the big question.
Well, maybe Apple will announce it in a couple of weeks. They've got one of their massive press conferences coming up.
Oh, my God. Will the iPhone be bigger or smaller?
Yes.
Tune in to find out.
Exactly. Something's got to break the phone design monotony. That it really does. Maybe Apple will do it this year. I doubt it. Probably next year or in a few years' time.
Or what about, let's just not bother. Let's just everyone ignore this Apple conference because they're really boring.
You can't just leave them screaming in a room by themselves. All right, we'll move on. Our final story before the quiz, yay, our final story this week is about Thinks. So, Sian, you've been with us about a month now.
Yes.
And you spent an awful lot of that time looking into a really, really interesting industry that everyone knows about, but not many people talk about, at least openly.
Yeah, definitely. So the crux of it is that having a period is really bad for the environment. So bear with me. So disposable sanitary products, so that's your classic tampons and pads. They're made of 90% plastic. And, you know, the average woman in the UK uses more than 11,000 of these in her lifetime. So that's a lot of waste. You know how long plastic takes to decompose on a landfill? And
11,000?
I know, I'm processing that.
Yeah.
Goodness me. And you've got written down here 200,000 tonnes of waste in the UK alone every year.
Yeah, and imagine a lot of those get flushed down toilets because there's no bins around, or they just get thrown in random places. And so they end up being eaten by animals in woods or you know, in seas and things like that. So it's really not great. And I think it's something that is in the back of some women's minds, but even I didn't know it was that bad, and I don't think we really think about it at all because we're too busy in being in lots of horrible pain. So that just got me thinking because, you know, I'd heard a bit about moon cups. They were getting a bit more popular. So that's just the little cup thing that you wash out. But nothing was really going anywhere. I just thought it was quite a stagnant industry where things weren't really changing and people didn't really care about it. So then I started seeing adverts for Thinks, and I thought, you know, this could be a really interesting alternative.
So did these popped up on your Facebook feed?
Yeah, and actually I spoke to a lot of people who use them, and a lot of where they get them from is from seeing lots of adverts. So yeah, they've got a really good marketing campaign.
And because these are just they're kind of, they're pants.
Yeah.
With you explain them.
Yeah. So they literally are just pants. So you just bleed straight into them. There's nothing in the pants themselves. They're just made out of four layers of different materials to stop you bleeding everywhere. So one is called moisture wicking, which is what you use in sportswear to stop you sweating, basically. And it's just a really tight weave of material that moves the moisture onto the next layer, which is cotton, which is absorbent. So they also put silver in there to, you know, fight bacteria, and they have polyurethane, which I can say really well, which is just impermeable, basically. So all of these things work together for you to just pop on pants and not have to do anything else, or at least that's the idea. And they've just released an organic cotton range, which is also, again, better for the environment and better for you, your sensitive skin.
And there's been a few companies that have tried to do this in recent years with varying degrees of success. But from the people that you spoke to that were using this product and similar products, it was mixed feedback, but mostly positive.
It was. So I did a bit of looking around for people that have been using it, and there was just so many people that were really surprised at the fact that they actually worked. So I think people, you know, tampons and pads are really not great. They're really uncomfortable and they don't really do their job half the time. So I think people just try them on a whim, but then a lot of women were actually really surprised that they did what they were supposed to.
So sorry, I just have to find out a bit more about them. Just to be super basic about it, is it basically pants with a big pad in them that soaks up the blood?
It's not like a big pad. It's just these four layers are just in the crotch area, so it's thicker around the crotch, but the rest of it is just a pant, but it's like built into the pant and it's not this massive bulky thing around there.
And they're machine washable?
Yeah,
So once you've finished using them, you just kind of put them in the machine and then you're good to go.
Yeah, so that's the biggest selling point with Thinks, really, is that they're trying to combat this massive waste that we do with, you know, one-use sanitary products, because you can take them off and wash them. But that also brings up, you know, quite a big issue that I found with it when I was talking to this lady called Hayley Smith, who's the founder of FlowAid, because Thinks recommend that you hand wash them on a cold wash. And of course, lots of girls have had to wash blood out of their pants. That's not going to do it. And if you're wearing bloody pants, if for want of less images, it's not, you know, it's not great. It's not getting rid of all the bacteria, and that is pretty dangerous. So really, it's hard to sort of understand how actually reusable they are.
So as well as the cleanliness and the ability to wash them issue, because they're meant to be good for, what, 60 washes?
Yeah.
There's also the issue of a lot of people that you spoke to said that if they were having a particularly heavy month, that a product like this that isn't as kind of heavy duty as traditional tampons and sanitary pads, it just doesn't quite cut it. We're not there yet with the engineering and the technology that goes into them.
Yeah, so the biggest, you know, the core product is called hip huggers, and they're meant to hold two tampons worth of blood. That's a lot to go in a few layers of material. So, you know, a lot of women did say that they realised straight away they couldn't wear them without backup things. So that raises a whole nother problem. If they're only useful for really light periods, you obviously got to use disposable products. So if somebody can't afford both Thinx and organic products, which are better for the environment, does that remove the problem at all if you're still using these replacements, these
and
alternatives?
You mentioned, was it FlowAid, the charity that works to get more people access to sanitary products? One of the points that they raise, and it's a really fair one, is these are really, really expensive.
Yeah, so they're an American company, so if you're buying them from England, they're about £26, but of course you've got the big shipping fees on that. So a lot of women that I spoke to said they just waited until it was on sale, because another thing is you can't just buy one pair. You can't have one pair because you've got to wash them. They've got to dry. You've got to change them.
60 washes isn't that much either, is it?
No, not if you're washing them every day.
Yeah.
That's 60 days.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you need quite a few of them. Yeah, this could mount up, couldn't it? Although, sanitary products are also very expensive, and they also include tax, famously.
Yeah,
yes,
they do.
In the
and
UK, yes.
Yeah, they do. But so one woman said she brought five. That's a lot. A lot of people, I know, a lot of people won't be able to afford all of that. But she says for her, in the long term, it was an investment. But that's alongside buying other things, and that's trying to wear them for a year, which is not recommended by Thinx or by FlowAid. So yeah, it's one of those where there's potential, but there's just a lot of things to work out still for it to be a viable alternative.
But what's key here is that there's a few companies, and it remains a few when you think of the amount of companies that are dealing with problems that are way less important.
What are you saying about AR?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, what? It's super important. I mean, it really affects everyone's everyday lives, right? The kind of...
There will always be those that focus on the frivolous, but this is a really important issue, and the lack of innovation, and I encourage everyone to go and read Sian's feature on the website, because it goes into a lot more depth on this, is that there's just been no innovation. That these products that more than half the world's population use every month, nothing's changed in, what, like 80 years, pretty much. Like small, even the messaging around it, nothing's changed. So you still have these, I'm sure you feel a lot more strongly about this, these
horribly awful adverts.
Yeah, although because Thinx, they're kind of well known for their different messaging.
Yeah.
And they kind of seem to have headed off in the other direction, in not necessarily, it hasn't been that successful, has it?
No, it has caused a lot of controversy. They were almost not allowed in the subway in New York and things like that. And they referenced the famous words of Donald Trump and called it pussy grabbing underwear.
So they have
been controversial, but it means that people are paying attention, and hopefully more people will start to think about something that, as we said, is quite a niche discussion, really.
Yeah, and because they've also had a few problems internally, haven't they?
Yeah,
at the company.
Their adverts are very feminist. They're kind of trying to be all out there and things like that. But they did have a bit of a speed bump when their CEO, Mickey, she was accused of sexual assault allegations, so like taking her clothes off in front of them, and I think like going into
very, very
from the
weird
toilet
behavior.
Just lots of strange things, and nothing really came of it. It was settled, but we don't know what happened. So there has been a lot of controversy around Thinx as well. They also did a thing where if you brought one, you'd get some money off the next one, but the fine print didn't really work out, and there is some buzz around them online. But yeah, that was back earlier this year.
And it would be interesting to hear if anyone that listens to the podcast, because the thing that really grabbed me about it was, oh, everyone has seen these on Facebook, that when Facebook decides if you're a man or a woman, it goes, well, ha, you'll see these adverts. And that's how so many people are finding out about this product. So it's slowly these alternatives are getting out there and people are trying them out and finding out whether they're right for them or not. So it'd be interesting to hear from anyone out there that's listening, if they've tried them, what they thought of them. And, you know, is there has to be a future for this kind of thing, because that innovation has to come. Mm-hmm. We can't keep using these old solutions and having these weird adverts with blue liquid and smiley people in white rooms.
Classic blue liquid.
You can dance on your period.
Yeah. So it's progress, albeit yeah. We're not quite there yet. But there's a lot more to read about in Sian's feature on wider.co.uk. So go and check it out. Okay, so we'll finish the show with a quiz. Ooh. A quiz.
Is this wise?
Yes, it's a good quiz. I like this one.
Okay, okay.
The dating app Bumble is on the cover of this month's magazine. It's a Tinder rival, and its main point of differentiation is it ensures that women initiate the conversation. So rather than Tinder, which is well known for men just sending dick pics to people completely unsolicited, Bumble at least gives women the option of saying if they want to have a conversation or not. So
and apparently it's a much, I haven't used it, but apparently it's a much nicer place as a result.
This is what they say, and this is what an awful lot of users
say.
Yes,
this astonishing claim. And yes. Also, because the reason they're on the cover is because the founder, Whitney Wolf, is launching a new company to take on that other hellhole of the internet, LinkedIn.
Yes.
May she be righteous with her sword of justice. I cannot wait for any competitors to LinkedIn. Truly one of the worst places around.
If anything needs disrupting, it's LinkedIn. So I wonder how much you know about Bumble and Tinder's other rivals. So I'm going to read you the name of a dating app or website, and I want you to tell me who it's for or what it does.
Okay, incredible. I have no idea about any of this.
Oh, there's one on the back. You could cheat if you were looking. Okay, right. So... Bristler.
Bristler.
A walking thing?
Walking.
I'm going to go for men with beards.
Well, I mean, women can have beards too, Roland.
Well, excuse me, people with beards, regardless of their gender.
Yeah, so it started as a joke website, but Bristler founder John Kershaw about a year ago, so it might be less or more by now, depending, says the app now has more than 100,000 registered users. Bristler.
That's so great.
Yeah.
I especially, for those out there more interested in the subject, I especially recommend the subreddit on beards. It is, it's a beautiful place.
So it's Bristler for people who want to date people with beards and people who have beards.
Yeah, I guess.
Does everyone have to have a beard? Do you have to have a beard?
Don't ask follow-up questions. I would imagine it's for people who like beards to find people with beards, and people with beards to find people who like people with beards.
Your beard is looking great, by the way.
It's doing all right. Yeah, I have a wedding this weekend. Not mine. I gave it a bit of a pre-wedding trim.
Okay.
There we go. But I imagine Bristler would be an absolute nightmare for pogonophobes, so steer clear if you're afraid of beards. Pogonophobes?
I'm not going to... I don't know. Are afraid of beards?
Yeah, pogonophobes.
Okay.
Wow. Look it up, maybe, if that's the right word. Number two, Sizzle.
Sizzle.
S-I-Z-Z-L. All of these are missing vowels all over the place.
Exactly.
Sizzle.
Food related?
Food.
Okay, Sizzle. Sizzle. So, let's try and think of this. Is it maybe something to do with... I would say either barbecue or extreme suntanning.
Ooh, ooh. I'm going to give you both a point.
Yes.
It's bacon.
Bacon.
Oh, my God.
Bacon. Is it for bacon lovers.
Oh, so not it's not for bacon, for bacon to meet bacon.
No.
Bacon pan.
It's where people who love bacon go to meet people who love bacon.
To eat bacon, presumably.
I guess you could eat bacon if that's your thing, yeah. Mm. It's a bit of a joke one, I should say. It was created by Oscar Mayer, the food conglomerate.
I assume you guys are on Writer, no E, the dating app for writers?
Oh, does this actually exist?
No, I just made it up.
It probably does.
It almost certainly does. Yes.
Most of these that I Googled, I was like, dating app for bacon? Yep, there is one.
Yeah, it's just a snark about semicolons, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so that's a point all. It's 2-1 to Roland. Okay. Next one, Wingman.
Wingman.
Is this where you like find people to help be a wingman for you?
Oh, that sounds horrifyingly plausible. I think maybe that is right. But okay, but to have another guess, is it a place where people who kind of consistently get stuck as wingmen go to meet each other, kind of like a sort of super dating friend zone?
These are very good suggestions, and they probably both exist, I'd imagine. But that's not right. It's Tinder for planes.
Yeah.
So you create a profile with your picture, your first name, your age, your occupation, your flight number, and the app pairs you with other people on the flight. So you can either join the, you can either do your thing that you shouldn't really do on a plane, or you can find someone on your flight that you might like to spend 8 hours in a noisy, airless, smelly, slightly annoying cabin.
But you can't move seats.
Mm.
So do you just message?
Now, this isn't my idea. This is someone else's idea.
Wow, yeah. I reckon it's almost certainly populated by people looking to do networking on planes or something like that.
Yeah, I imagine as you go up the classes, there's probably a bit more usage.
Yeah, exactly.
Or if there's any usage.
Yeah, okay.
Maybe I'll sign up.
Or you could ask Jeremy White. I bet he done it.
Oh, dear. Oh, dear. Don't cast false aspersions at Jeremy while he's not here. Okay, next one is called... Oh, dear, what's it called? Hang on. Twin Dog.
Twin Dog. For dog lovers, a bit too literal, or...
Find people that look like you. Yeah, a bit of a narcissist.
It's dogs.
Yeah, dogs.
It's a Tinder for dogs. Twin Dog is an app that connects dog lovers and their dogs based on location. So I guess it's a way of meeting other dogs a lover of dogs, but also other dog owners, I guess, might be the sort of happy bonus that you get to meet a nice spaniel and maybe a nice life companion.
So you're not trying to pimp out your dogs?
No.
Okay.
Although that might be another thing if you want your dog to... make a dog another dog with a different kind of dog.
Mm, I'm not an expert, but dogs don't seem to need much pumping out. they seem to be fairly, kind of confident in that area.
The right, the pure breed.
Maybe, or just the right mutt. Okay, final one. Roland, you've won 3-1, but you might just win 3-2. The final one. Trek Passions.
Oh, okay, too easy. Oh, yeah. No, go on. You go, Sean.
Well, my morals are fighting me, but I saw it, so I don't want
to
pretend
that
I'm
smart. Need to stop putting
it
on a page that I hold up in front of your faces.
Is it about Star Trek? I'm assuming.
It's Star Trek. According to the website, whether you're just looking for like-minded friends, someone fun to attend a sci-fi convention with, or maybe something more, Trek Passions is here for you.
Oh, that's cool.
And it's nice to know that it is.
I'm surprised. I wonder if there's a Game of Thrones one.
Oh,
there will be. Yeah, in my 20 minutes of idle googling to come up with this quiz, basically, if you put in Tinder for something, you're going to find it. They've all been thought of.
Yeah, have you ever played Reigns? Sorry, this is a bit of a random tangent. Reigns is a kind of medieval style ruling game, but the functionality is with Tinder. So basically, you kind of like you swipe yes or. Yes or no when you're deciding whether you're going to like feed the peasants this year.
So much innovation.
I know.
Yeah.
I know. Yeah.
If only it was applied to products for periods.
One day.
One day.
Perhaps.
A swipe.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Next week, another quiz, more news. Do tune in. We'll see you again then. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.